This episode is sponsored by Becker Continuing Professional Education, the brand most trusted for CPA. Becker also provides CPE that helps you fulfill your career goals, not just compliance requirements. Visit becker.com/CPE to learn more. Welcome to On the Air with Accounting Today. I'm Editor-in-Chief Dan Hood. You know, 2020 demonstrated both that accounting firms can embrace remote technologies and that they offer tremendous opportunities for them. Here to talk about how to leverage those opportunities in a world that very suddenly has far fewer geographic boundaries to hiring staff and serving clients is Gail Crosley. She's one of the foremost consultants on growth to accountants in the country. Gail, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me here. Great to see you again.
Yeah. So one of the things, throughout the pandemic, many firms moved to just as much of their work and their client services to remote as they had to. Just what they had to do because we were in the middle of an emergency. But that's not necessarily what a full-fledged, intentionally sort of boundaryless firm will look like. What do you think that kind of firm will look like?
Well, now that we have been getting used to it and comfortable with it in terms of service delivery, now what happens next is how can we take the service delivery model that we've had for years on end and recraft it into a more efficient and value-based service delivery model and then go beyond that into the demand generation side and what can we do to drive demand not only with current clients but also in the market itself at large. And that leads us to the next question, which is what is the definition of the market? Which has already, you know, always been very geographic centric around, you know, around us as the center of the universe, our own universe with our clients, and now extended out.
Gotcha. All right. So let's take that maybe in a couple of steps. Why don't we talk about how can firms make the most of this? You know, they've made the switch. How can they make the most of really diving into it in terms of their staff? Like, how can they make the most of this sort of boundaryless office, whether it comes to their current staff or hiring job candidates, that kind of thing?
The staff itself now, getting familiar with it in the context of service delivery, probably is noticing that there's an opportunity to spend time with clients in a different way. Small snippets of time, like Zoom meetings or telephone calls, to keep in touch with clients and not just episodically, you know, get our, you know, our heads up and say, okay, now I've got to go out to the client's office and it's a big deal. We can pick up the phone or pick up the Zoom and go ahead and talk to them. So this drives us to the next question, which is how we package and price and deliver our services. Well, wait a minute. If I'm tasked to do an audit or a tax preparation or client accounting services, well, I can, in fact, connect with a client more frequently and episodically, and it enables advice and counsel. It enables a bigger thought process around what could I be doing to help the client in their business. All businesses, almost without exception, have had major changes, which would drive the curiosity of what has happened in your business and how is that going to impact not only the services that we've traditionally done in the past, but how would it impact us helping them in a broader way? So I see the possibility for using this as a reason for recrafting and packaging services that are perhaps monthly retainers, advice and counsel, and things that we can use it as the excuse, right? But a good excuse for changing the way that we provide services to our current clients. And that has everything to do with the staff and the kinds of services the staff are currently providing, and then how to recraft that so that they're becoming more and more advisory in a time when advisory services are much needed.
So is that going to require a fair amount of reskilling on the part of staff, do you think, to get them prepared to offer those kind of services in that kind of atmosphere? Like you said, the sort of frequent contact, but it's only 5 minutes because I call you up just to check on a certain thing. Whereas in the past, as you said, people think about, I'm going to go out to the client. It's a chunk of time, probably, that I can bill for. Now we're looking at more frequent, more intimate contacts in the sense of a regular basis talking to clients. Is that going to require a different mindset, skill set on the part of staff?
It really is, and that'll be another topic that you and I will probably cover. But for now, we can talk about the fact that if I were a managing partner right now, I'd get some people together, sit down and say, okay, we're going to take our services and we're going to design and innovate them in a way that provides value-driven advice and counsel that we are, some of us are doing in dribs and drabs, but others maybe not so much. And how do we actually create the service offering? And how do we actually get our up-and-comers to be able to articulate and deliver it. And I can see in my head, you know, teaming younger people with more senior advisors and having them on the same Zoom calls and all kinds of things like that. But the design is the important thing. And we're not really a profession who is used to designing services. We're a compliance-driven kind of a profession. And so innovation in service design is something that is in and of itself a new skill set that we're learning.
Gotcha. And that sort of leads us naturally to the flip side. We talked about what it's going to mean for staff. But now we're going to talk, I'd like to talk about what it means for clients. We've talked a little bit about, obviously, sort of the flip side of any discussion of what's going on with staff is going to involve clients. But maybe we can look and we talk about this boundary. It's a new word. We discussed this. Boundaryless is a new word. So I'm still having trouble. I can spell it, but I can't pronounce it. Boundaryless firm. What is that? What is that going to look like for clients in terms of how we approach them, how we serve them, all those sorts of issues?
All righty. So boundaryless. There, I got it out of my
mouth.
You
got one, done in one. Excellent.
So we're going to have to take the borders off the thinking of the clients. The clients are used to us, you know, whining and dining and going out to their offices and, you know, and having lunch with them and doing things that we always did. And as a result, it's our job to lead them down a different path, which is the path of this is how we operate in the future. And if you think about the fact that a consultant is somebody who leads their client, provides leadership and support to the client, this is just basically changing your mindset in terms of there is a new way that we will be communicating with you. And if we do that, then we don't have to be concerned about, oh my goodness, you know, we're not going to be able to entertain our clients. And believe me, nobody else is either. So you haven't lost very much. He or she who understands that removing the borders in the mind of the clients is your job, not the client's job, and that you are the one who articulates this is how we have found a better way to service you and sell the value proposition to the client that this is the way that we do it, then you're going to have the ability to really influence them in terms of where you want the client to go. This is how we do it. We're going to be talking to you once a month. You can call us at any time. We have found that, you know, that this is a better way to operate. The experience of the last year has taught us that, and that type of thing. So it'll be all about us leading the client down that path so that you get them where you want them to be in your thinking about this whole thing.
Gotcha. And making them comfortable with the calling you on a regular basis, making them comfortable with the notion of every time I talk to you, it's not going to involve a bill, it's not going to involve expense. That also goes to the pricing issues you talked about earlier.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This advanced pricing model is really something that now you have the excuse to implement it. And I highly recommend it right now because it's kind of a once in a career time opportunity to say, wait a minute, Mr. Client, we have found that there's a better way, and it happened with PPP. I mean, PPP was something that wasn't, you know, you get on the phone and you have one conversation and you build a client for it, and that's the end of it. It was a perfect example of consulting services where there was back and forth and, you know, in a lot of strategy conversation, a lot of execution conversation, and it was a perfect place for you to have really experience what it looks like to provide ongoing advice and counsel to a client.
And that over the long term, regardless of whether you are boundaryless, that's something we've been telling accounting firms they should be doing for a long time. It's moving to that sort of consulting advisory work. It's higher value. You can charge more for it. Clients get more value out of it. But we're going to take a quick break, step away for a few seconds. Thank you again to our sponsor, Becker Continuing Professional Education. No matter which type of accounting professional you are, Becker helps you fulfill career goals, not just compliance requirements. Visit becker.com/CPE to learn more. And we're back. Let's move a little bit, sort of take a broader thing. I mean, one of the things people think about with the boundaryless office and the remote work and all that sort of stuff is that there's a lot of issues around staff and staffing, training, management issues around that, but also management issues around how you manage your clients if you're not seeing them on a face-to-face, all the different aspects of that. But then there's a sort of extra layer on top of that in terms of how you think about your markets, right? You think about, we're changing how you think about your staff, how you think about your clients, but now you can also change how you think about your markets. Let's talk a little bit about that. How will the boundaryless firm approach markets, discover them, decide what they are, think about them?
Well, this is the place that is truly exciting, because if you think about these geographic boundaries, they're only in our heads. I mean, it's not carved in stone anywhere that if we're in Peoria that we can't go, you know, outside of Peoria, and we can go all over the United States or international for that matter. And now with the technology tools, and we see it now on the delivery side in our current client base, we now see that we can provide demand fulfillment through these tools. But let's go over to demand generation and demand generation above and beyond our clients. If you take those borders off and you say, wait a minute, I can be national. In fact, I say to my clients, all you need to do is declare that you are, and you are. And if they say to me, well, I don't have any clients, you know, outside of Peoria, I'm like, that doesn't matter. You know, when Gail Crossley opened up her practice, I said, I'm national. That didn't mean I had clients anywhere, because I didn't have any clients at the time. I was like, I have declared my footprint. Now, once you declare your footprint is, and we'll use national as an example, then it everything that flows from there flows in a very different way. So, for example, you have the ability now, if you are in a particular industry niche, to look at the industry niche nationwide. And if you think about the significant differences between each industry niche and what it could mean to go national, think about just, for example, life sciences and going national, or renewable energy and going national, student housing and going national, cannabis, senior living, oil and gas, the list goes on and on. They each have a national geographic footprint that is different and has markets that are very concentrated. So if you were going to go into life sciences, it might be five different cities that have the majority of life sciences. If it's cannabis, it's going to be certain states that have cannabis legalized right now, and so forth. So once you do that, you will naturally say, wait a minute, do we have any clients outside of Peoria? No offense to Peoria if you're in it, but it's an easy thing to say, and it's a rather modest-sized city within the middle of the country. But basically, you'll go through your client base and say, let me make absolutely sure that, in fact, we don't have any with operations outside of Peoria. And you'll find right off the bat that you do. You already have some geographically spread clients. And once you do this, once you identify, you're going to want to look at the size of each of those markets. So if you're going national and you're in life sciences, you want to see which are the five cities and how many life science companies there are in each geographic market. The number one indicator of good market conditions is how many fish are in the pond. And so that will get you started down the road of identifying where you should be next.
Excellent. Well, you know, it's interesting. You make the point, right, that there are, in most cases, you're going to be picking up one client in each city across the country. Industries tend to cluster, and the more specific you get with industry, the more likely you are to find, like you said, those five cities across the country. You could probably point to five hotspots of life sciences, as you said. So it's interesting. It requires a sort of a broadening of your mind, and the similar thing applies to at every level we talked about. You know, if you can find clients everywhere, you can serve clients everywhere, you can also hire staff everywhere. You get some advantages with staff in terms of you may be able to hire in cheaper areas where costs are less. But certainly if you can broaden your idea of where your markets are, just your pool of prospects grows enormously. Are there any downsides to that? Do you see any downsides does it add cost? If, you know, we say you don't need to go see clients, but every once in a while you kind of need to go see a client, maybe just for the final sale or to close the deal, or whatever the case may be. Are there any downsides do you see, or anything people need to manage as they approach this sort of broader boundaryless market?
Yes, probably, Dan, the most important thing is to do your research and analysis up front and not go flailing around all over the place. I see this in the international segment or niche leaders that I work with, that I'll walk into the firm and I'll say, okay, you're international, where are you? And they'll say, everywhere. And they'll be, you know, trying to do work in 190 countries. And I'm like, wait a minute, let's step back, let's do the research and analysis, and let's look at the country pairs that are most prevalent between your area in the United States and whatever other countries there are. And usually it's about a half a dozen. And so what happens is if you jump past this and you say, oh, well, we have a client in Tampa in life sciences, so let's go and plant a flag in Tampa. I'm like, wait a minute, that could be a one-off. So it's great that you have a client in Tampa, but it may not be great in terms of the strategy of life sciences. So what you're doing is you're comparing, you're doing research and analysis so that you don't end up being inefficient in your selling process or in the delivery of the service process. And what you'll do also, in addition to looking at the market sizes, are you'll research competition, because it could be that some of the markets have very stiff competition and others not so much. And so perhaps you would go into Austin versus Boston. And what you'll do is you're going to also be comparing your various industries and which ones have the best market conditions in terms of size and competition. But also, you'll find that if you're in three or four industries in your firm, your geographic footprint for each one of them might be different. So don't make the mistake of saying, well, we're all over the United States and all of our industries are going to be equally, you know, concentrated hither and yon. If you're in life sciences, then you're going to have one geographic map. If you're in cannabis, you're going to have a different geographic map. And so the research and analysis is what enables you to really get your arms around this. And once you've completed that research and analysis, you say, okay, great, now what do I do? And what you do now is you go out and you interview people in each of those markets. You find connection points, and you only need really one. I remember when I started my practice, I had one connection point. I knew one CPA, and that was it. But once I did the interview with the one CPA, I said, who else could I talk to? And he gave me a couple more names, and then I got a couple more names and a couple more names. And basically, you'll fan out, so you'll be able to find, you know, some people in that geography. It reminds me of a client that I had out on the West Coast several years ago in a not-for-profit niche, and they were way up in the northwest corner of the country, and they wanted to come down into California. And we set up interviews that in Northern California with several different other nonprofit thought leaders and providers and so forth, and we swooped in there and did about 30 interviews. And at the end of the 30 interviews, we knew exactly what kind of not-for-profits were going to be the ones that had the best market conditions. And then once we did that, once you do the interviews, you will identify early adopters who may want to work with you very closely, so you can plant your flag wherever that geography is. Practice on that first early adopter. Understand not only the service offering, but the market itself and what the market conditions are and the natural nuances in that market. And then you're off to the races. If you do early adopter programs right, you'll find your distribution channels and you will be able to then open up a market at a time. But it's basically the recipe.
Yep. No, I think that makes perfect sense. And I think it's a very important note there, right, is that just because you say you're it's important sort of intellectually and from a mindset perspective to say I'm national or I'm international, but it doesn't mean you literally have to serve the entire world or the entire country. It means that you're able to serve the right clients for you in the right industries, wherever they may happen to be, not necessarily blanket coverage. Because it's interesting, you talk about firms in international practices, and the ones I've talked to that seem to have the most success are extraordinarily specific in many cases. It's like, well, I work with, you know, I'm in Mississippi or in Alabama, so I only work with Korean automotive companies because they have a big connection there. Or I do a firm in Pittsburgh, very specifically only focused on German companies coming to Pennsylvania. They were very specifically focused on that. They had tremendous expertise in it, and they tremendous connections between themselves and Germany, but that was it. That was their focus. They weren't just, well, we'll do anything from all across the world. They were this very specific niche, international niche, and similarly with the Alabama-Korea connection. So it's important to recognize that. I think that being boundaryless doesn't mean that you're everywhere and everything to all people or working in all industries. Still requires very significant discipline and focus.
Well, you bring up a great point, and that is that you go where the market takes you. In other words, you do your research and analysis, and then based on that, you have a good understanding of what the map is, and then you go where the market takes you. And I'll give you a perfect example. Once I had that one person that I knew, and I interviewed him, he told me that, of course, there are 50 state societies, and state societies would be a perfect place for you to do some interviews. And I said, I came back to the office and I said, okay, now wait a minute. Am I going to go from Alabama to Wyoming and, you know, and interview 50 people? And find out which of the 50 states are the best. I mean, that could have been, you know, a year's worth of work. So I happened upon a provider of goods and services to the CPA firm market, and I interviewed him, and I said, so I've got a dilemma here of you know, 50 people that I need to interview to find out where the CPA firms are and where I should go. And he said, don't worry about that. There are only five states really that carry the weight and the influence, you know, within all the 50 states. And he said, and they're Ohio and Maryland. And he gave me, you know, three or four or five of them. And so right off the bat, I went from 50 states down to five states. And then I confirmed that that was the case. And it turned out that Missouri was one of those states. Now, you would never have thought about Missouri because they don't have that many CPAs in Missouri, but it turned out that they had the largest conference for running an accounting practice, which is what I wanted to do, is to find where those managing partners were. And so I ended up in Missouri. And as a result of that, I did a lot of work in the Midwest in my early years. And then it morphed over to the Northeast and the Mid-Atlantic. Then it morphed over to California over the years. And it's really interesting. So as long as you stay flexible and you have your framework that your research and analysis gave you, but then you listen to the market and you go where the market takes you, that is the secret sauce.
There you go. Excellent. Well, and that's that, and being ready to change, right? Being flexible about where, like I said, following the market, not just now, not just as you're establishing yourself, but constantly being ready to move with the market wherever it may happen to go.
Perfect point. Absolutely.
Well, very exciting stuff. Like I said, the Boundaryless Firm it offers tremendous opportunities on all kinds of aspects of an accounting firm practice, but particularly, as you say, in terms of finding and developing and profiting from new markets. Gail, any final thoughts?
I think, yes, the final thought I have is that whenever you have a market disruption like we've had, you have a lot of things that are challenging in many ways and can suck your time away, and really need to focus you in on the present and what's going on. And we've spent a year doing that. Now, 2021 will be a different year. It will be a year that you've got some of these things under your belt. And so now would be the time to start thinking more about the future than about the present, because the present has been 100% of most of our attention in the last year. But now 2021 enables you to really get your head up out of the grindstone, take a step back, and in your strategic planning, take a look at this whole concept of boundaryless and what it really means for your current clients, for your staff, for the markets at hand, for the growth of your firm, and utilize this as an opportunity to really take that on, figure it out, and come out the other end with a firm that is national and or international and highly, highly specialized, because now it gives you the opportunity to have that specialization that you really will fulfill your dreams for your firm.
Okay, great advice. Gail Crosley, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Good to see you.
And thank you all for listening. This episode of On the Air was produced by Accounting Today, with audio production by Justin Rodriguez. Rate or review us on your favorite podcast platform and see the rest of our content on accountingtoday.com. Thanks again to our guests, and thank you for listening.